This is Bicky.
And Lou Goldzer.
On February 20th, 1984, interviewing for the National Council of Jewish Women's Oral History Project Number 2, Eddie Steinfeld. Tell us where you live, Eddie.
It's Eddie Steinfeld.
Eddie Steinfeld. Tell us where you live, Eddie.
Stanton Heights Street, you want to know?
Yeah. Everything.
Yeah. 4741 Coleridge, Coleridge Street.
Perfect.
Yes.
Are we going to start again?
Is that important?
We'll start where we left off.
Is that important?
Start where you were.
How does she repeat myself?
Yeah.
All right. Well, last time we met, Eddie, you were in New York, you'd gotten sick, you couldn't afford to pay for the doctor, and your family sent you money to come home. What happened then?
Well, I came home.
All right, and what'd you do? What kind of work?
I came home and I didn't, there was nothing for me to do at, I don't recall that particular point in time what I did do. That was 1934-35, I think. I went in to sell printing, and I gave it a fancy title, theatrical advertising, which it actually was. I think I mentioned that to you before, that I had gone in there and sold advertising or printing for the Draub Burger Printing Company, and I used to go up on Film Row. There were the distributors of motion picture film. By the way, my bathroom, the bathtub is being fixed. There's a leak, and so there's a plumber upstairs working. And so if you hear a noise in the background, that's him hammering away. You'll forgive me, and I apologize. This is unforeseen, that I didn't know he was coming tonight. The water's leaking down into the kitchen, and I believe they see them fixing the kitchen. And so, anyway, I had sold theatrical advertising right up on Film Row, like I think I mentioned it before, and sold to the exhibitors advertising or printing for to promote their the motion picture which they were showing at a particular time. And it was the heyday of the motion picture industry. In Pittsburgh also, and all over the country, there were hundreds of motion pictures, thousands of motion pictures in the country. And it seemed like Depression years made money for the motion picture industry, because where could you go and spend 2 hours or 3 hours for 10 cents or 25 cents and sit all afternoon or all evening and see this beautiful world of make-believe and forgetting about living on welfare or trying to hustle to make a dollar in order to support a family. It's a good place to send the kids for 10 cents, and the kids were not around the house to bother you. So that's what I did at that point in time, selling that.
Ed, speaking about that, there were some Jewish distributors, people that owned various theaters in Duquesne, Coriopolis, Aliquippa, Manchester.
Right.
How did these people happen to get into that particular industry? How did like Braworski or Roth or Myers or some of these other people?
Very good question, but I can't pin it down, except that it could have been a fallout from the producers of the motion picture industry, because the founders and the motion picture industry were Jews, the producers, Warner Brothers, Goldwyn, Carl Laimel, Adolf Zucker. They were really the founders, and apparently since these Jews were running the motion picture, creating motion picture, maybe Jews felt, well, we should get into it, or it worked out that way, it became a Jewish business, like the department stores for a while was a Jewish business too.
out of Kalamazoo. Wasn't there a Ben Kalamazoo?
Yeah, well, he was a local manager of Warner Brothers here in Pittsburgh. But you had you had Jews on both sides of the fence. You had Jews who saw the motion picture film and Jews who bought the motion picture film or rented the motion picture film in order to exhibit it in their respective theaters.
How about directors?
Directors, there were not too many directors.
Did this come out as a result of Jewish theater drama?
I don't know. There is no connection. There is no connection between the Yiddish theater and the motion picture business. It's a different thing, a different business entirely. There are more. You had more Jews involved in theater, that is acting, than you did in the motion picture business. And it's interesting, in the motion picture business, a lot of Jewish people who were actors and actresses acquired a non-Jewish name. And it was only years afterwards, you found out that they were Jewish.
You mean like Paul Muni or something?
Yeah, like by his good example. Yeah. Paul Muni was a good example.
We had a lot of people in vaudeville, like Eddie Cantor.
Eddie Cantor, they went under their real names. Paul Muni is a good example, but there were others like him who took on a motion picture name, which is easier maybe to pronounce. Of course, I don't even know whether Edward G. Robinson, whether that was his real name or not, but Edward G. Robinson was Jewish.
How about people like Eddie Cantor and Georgie Jessel and some of the comedians? Where did they come from? From Second Avenue or Hester Street or
Not Jewish theater. Vaudeville. You know, and there was make a buck, get up and sing and dance. And I remember in the 30s, I went to New York, and this was up around Eastern Parkway, where my late aunt lived. And in these apartment houses, they would have a lot an inside court, and you'd see these troubadours coming into an inside court, and they would sing Yiddish numbers or play an instrument, but they would play Yiddish, and then the people, neighbors looking down, listening to it, and they would throw them a nickel or a dime, and so on, and they picked up money that way. So,
well, how about the Borscht Circle?
Well, this was another avenue where the comedians or actors would go up to the Borscht Circuit in the summertime, and they would entertain at the various hotels. And I got to tell you a story about the. I knew a person in New York. I came to New York in my periodic trip to New York in the 30s, and I'm trying to break in on the Yiddish stage and get involved. And they had heard about me, the promoters, what I was promoting, involved with Yiddish theater in Pittsburgh, and they wanted me to go out and started to promote up in the Borscht Circuit, which I never did. But this one person who approached me, and I inquired about him, and I said, he went up to the Borscht Circuit and put out a big poster, and this is the hotel where these actors who were going to appear. Who were the actors? I mean, Boris Tomaszewski, Jacob B. Adler, Kestler, Mogilevsky. These were names, greats in the Yiddish theater. And the people were looking at that big poster with these names on it, like a small print, who said, "Will not appear." Funny. So, you could pack the house there, but they were all of him. So the poster could not appear.
You have to read the small print.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. That,
Do you think the movies is what killed the Jewish theater? What killed the Jewish theater?
No, language.
Language killed the Jewish theater. Yeah. The young children didn't know.
That's right. You don't, the language. Same thing, what killed the Yiddish newspapers? The same thing. You don't read Yiddish, and you don't speak Yiddish, and you don't hear Yiddish, so why support something which you don't understand? unfortunately, let's say. The Jewish immigrants who came to this country from Europe found himself in good surroundings, very comfortable surroundings when he went to a Yiddish theater with Yiddish all around him. And when they bought the Yiddish newspaper, they felt at home. They didn't feel that. That's when they were not in an alien world.
You think it was because there was so much other theater and so much other competition, and people tried to deny their Judaism, they tried to get away from that or not identify with it?
Well, if you recall, I mean, our history, we're talking about American history, this country was supposed to be the melting pot. As a matter of fact, I think there was a play that had to deal with the idea of melting pot.
Jules Angle, was it?
Where people from the various countries that come, and okay, we get into this big pot, and out of this big pot, we come up with a new people, and call it whatever it was called. But apparently, the melting pot did not take on. As a matter of fact, if you recall, this happened to do with the Jew and the non-Jew, the long-running play called Baby's Irish Rose, the Jew and the Catholic, and they had the wedding and so on and so forth. Well, there's going to be a merging of the Catholics and Jews and the. So what I'm saying is that now we look to perpetuate the ethnicity of these various groups, and we want them to retain their heritage. And so now what some people refer to us as, we are now like a symphony, and various heritages play a part in this huge orchestra of human beings.
You remember a thing like Golden and Medina? Wasn't that a play?
It could be, yes.
You
I mean, they
Jewish
they, yeah,
play,
could,
that,
yeah,
that
the,
melting pot idea.
Yeah, yeah. The Golden Medina. Well, they went and showed, well, this was, you're coming to this great country, this mm-hmm. country of the Golden Land. And the streets are paved with gold, and now you'd have to walk down and pick it up.
Mm-hmm. Now, we were working for the printer, and then where did we go from that? There was the actual commission.
Well, I say this was.
How old were you then?
Oh, I was, maybe 20, 21, maybe that time. In this period, I did not. Have a steady job and say, "Here, I worked for 5 years at a given job." And it was I was dancing. I danced from one wedding to another wedding. You know, I was manager of theater. I was some printing. We talked about selling advertising for a while for the Jewish Chronicle. Write numbers. But what I felt like doing at that point in time, although I did write, I kept on writing numbers, I kept on that for 7 years, but one of the things there was nothing consistent in what I did then, during the 30s.
Where did you get all your knowledge?
Street.
I mean, like the rich reading?
The street.
Well, you always had an interest in drama.
Well, I mean, it was because of the Yiddish theater. I mean,
the Yiddish? Was it the actors, the actresses?
Well,
the stage? What do you think it was?
Well, I think I mentioned to you, I did a play on the first play I did, was called Brown of Harvard, a quarterback. And I wanted to act, but what involved me more, because I had I can't pin it down, but I had a high regard for actors, great people, and the opportunity presented itself for me to work at the Yiddish Theater, starting as an usher and, going up the ranks, I became more involved. It wasn't a question of the language, because I did not know Yiddish, and I told you I had learned Hebrew, although my folks spoke Yiddish, but I became more well versed in Yiddish because of Yiddish theater. And then, you know, it's like grows on you, and you become involved, and you start liking them. And that's what. Does that answer your question?
Would you compare something like a kid wanting to be a fireman or a baseball player or something of that nature? You get hung up with it, or you have sort of an adulation of the theater people?
Well, willy-nilly, the more you become involved in something, maybe you say, well, this is for me, and it turned out that it was for me, and I pursued my acting during those years in the 30s with the Irene Kaufman settlement.
Was this acting or directing, or just acting
with the Young Players Guild and with the IKS Players, which were theater groups that were sponsored by the Irene Kaufman settlement. And I said, you know, I went over to the Y Playhouse after a while. But this was all, it grew on me, and I...
Did you find any part of it difficult, like memorizing lines or anything that
you learn, but memorize lines. Just make up your mind. That's all.
That's skill.
It's not a skill. It's you learn.
Did you aspire to be a director or a stager?
No, I didn't. I
producer.
There was no aspiration.
You just like to be any part of being around the theater.
Well, I was primarily interested in being an actress. I was not interested in directing, but producing, just being an actor. And of course, being around, in the theater, that was English, the American stage, having a couple of settlements, I wanted to act, but being around the Yiddish theater, that was a different thing entirely, because here I was connected with professional act, we were people from New York, and on so forth, big time operating act. I also tell you, which I think I left that out, which is a very important part of my life. Also in the 30s, I became involved with labor Zionism. And this was back in 1935.
The poem is rough?
No, labor Zionist. The labor Zionist, which is the party of...
Okay, now we're going to meet.
You were saying something about labor Zionism.
Yeah, which was poly Zionism, and that was the
real one.
The Labor Party, of which the people like Ben Gurion and Golda Meir, the people of labor Zionism, I became very active in the poly Zion, and I became very much involved with the work in Palestine and Lebanon.
What was going on with Labor Zion here? Did they have like little groups that met at shuls or what?
They were not religious Jews. They didn't meet in shuls. They were a secularist group in Zionism.
Well, who was big in Pittsburgh? Who was organizing?
There was nobody organizing. I don't. There was people like Harry Morgan, some Morgan and Kaufman, Fifth Avenue, Ushroff, Baskin. Mr. A. Baskin, Peerless Wallpaper and Paint, Borough Claire, Oscar Friedel, I'm trying to think, Sam Berman, these were Yiddish-speaking groups. There were two of them at that time in Pittsburgh. One younger, one older, quote unquote. And my dad was a member of the Labor Zionist movement. He belonged to the Fraternal Order, which was the Jewish National Workers Alliance, which is called also known as the Verbund. And they decided to organize a quote English speaking group in the Young Americans in Pittsburgh. And they became actively involved, and my late brother, and through the organization, my brother married his wife, which we met her there, Betty, and her name was Goldstein, and that's where I met my late wife, Sylvia Feldman, and So we met at the Y, and we carried on activities. We were young, and we did a lot of singing and dancing, the Hebrew songs and Israeli dances. I recall that we taught Hadassah how to dance the Horah and also to sing some Hebrew songs. And then there were other Zionist youth groups that developed afterwards in Pittsburgh too. The religious group, the Hapoel Mizrahi and Masada, general Zionist. We were very active. This was during when Miriam Ephraim was at the Y. She was in charge of club activities there, and very fine. They were fine women.
What was her name?
Miriam Ephraim. And he was a Karifi, and we formed the Zionist Youth Council, and we carried on. We brought Zionism to the fore in Pittsburgh. Somebody once referred to our particular group as tree planters. And I recall that we would also support the Hechelitz movement, which was young pioneers who got their training here in this country, and they would migrate to Israel and work on a kibbutz, a collective farm. There was a farm in New Jersey where they went training, and I went there a couple of summers just for the heck of it, and spent time working, picking tomatoes, and they were sold to Campbell, the camel soup.
Was this near Vineland?
It was near Vineland.
Woodbine?
No.
Near Camden, New Jersey.
No, it was around there was one up there called one of Heightstown, and this was the
Lakewood?
No, it wasn't Lakewood, although I did, there was a group there in Lakewood too. But it'll come to me, and we lived the life of austerity there, and
how long were you there?
Well, during the summer I spent a number of weeks there, and they would dole out the cigarettes to us who smoked, and they would do this for 1-2 in the morning or 2 in the evening or something, and the rest of the day we'd roll our own cigarettes there. But I remember one time I got tired of waiting for the good cigarettes and couldn't smoke the other, so I snuck out one night with another fellow who was also a get. And we were not the ones who were staying there, we just came there to help out. I remember sneaking out, and I went to the corner store and bought a pack of Camel cigarettes, and I felt guilty here. I'm smoking Camel cigarettes. I said, "You take the pack. You can't. I don't want to get caught with the pack." And I became very, very active in the group. And we did some. I was talking about the Hechelutz. I mean, it's the funny. If you know, I recall that. We need money to maintain the organization. I remember we had a tag day. Of course, we've been tagging also for Jewish National Fund, and we also had a tag day for we labor Zionists for the Chalitza. I remember going to on Center Avenue when where they would play cards, and I'd go to a table with the carpet, and I put the dance here about helping the pioneers in Israel, and I would collect money from the gamblers. And of course, I didn't care any height, and I wasn't ashamed to do it. I didn't feel anything wrong, I didn't feel guilty or anything. I said, "Hey, come on, you're Jews, and you want to support that." And of course, they didn't know what I was talking about anyway. Because how many Zionists were there nationally in the country? If they were, maybe in the 30s, if they were outside of Hadassah, if there were 30,000 in the entire country, there was a lot of Zionists.
Was that before AZA and the other movements?
Did you have a push here? Well, the AZA, that was the group. It had nothing to do with the Zionist Youth Group. And the Zionist Youth Group consisted of people like the groups I mentioned, like Hapoel Mizrahi and Masada. And there was also there was a Zionist group on a campus. There was a VUCA. I changed them into something else. And then through since we were a socialist Zionist youth movement, we became involved with the the liberal causes in this country. And we were affiliated, we attempted to affiliate ourselves for a while with the American student, it also came to me with the American Youth Congress. And I remember going to a convention in Cleveland and listening to Earl Browder, the head of the Communist Party, and Norman Thomas, the head of the Socialist Party. We became involved with, that was during the Depression, and also we were supporting the unions, and that's when the Wagner Labor Act came through, we supported that, and anything was liberal in this country here. We supported, and we did our picketing and whatever had to be done for the liberal cause here in this country. Although there were Jews who belonged to the Young Socialist League, and the Jews who belonged to the Young Communist League, and which we had always had different opinion, they would not accept the idea of Zionism, because they were internationalists. And what we said was, in order to be internationalist, you have to be a nationalist. And so our nationalism had to come first. Well, not come first. It was hand in hand. There was no hyphen between Zionism and socialism. And because of that, the zeal which the socialist Zionists, the Zionist socialists had, the labor Zionist movement, and because by their acts and by their deeds, I mean, today we have a Jewish state, because of those kibbutzim would not have been founded, which formed a sort of perimeter around in that little country called Palestine. And they defended themselves in the War of Liberation against the onslaught in of the Arab countries. And they built the country. And of course, the Hizbollah group, the labor movement of Israel, became very much involved with that too, because that was an offshoot of the party of the Labor Zionists, the Poly Zion, and to which all people could belong to, and so they made a decent wage, and instead of being exploited by the Jewish capitalists, the Jews who came to Israel in 1880, who became landowners, and they started to hire cheap Arab labor. And our slogan was to build and to be rebuilt in the country. And if we don't become workers ourselves, we're not going to be a country. We're not going to have a land of our own, which we eventually called Israel. So that also gave me, you asked me, did I learn? I mean, it was something that there's no formal education in it. It became part of my learning experience, whether it was in theater or whether it was in the labor Zionist movement or walking down the street and carrying on conversation, learning from others. So, my reading, and also, well, of course, I had this Hebrew background, which I told you about. My new education didn't off and on. I went for about, to Hebrew school, I went for about, about maybe 15 years. Because also during that time, I think I told you, I taught Sunday school.
Where?
I taught Sunday school at East Pittsburgh and Jeanette. Taught for a while, a couple times in Wilkinsburg. And that was under the Southwestern District, which was sponsored by the Council of Jewish Women, yeah.
Schoenfeld?
Yeah, Schoenfeld. Yeah, she was the, how I taught Sunday school based upon what my Hebrew education that I got at the Hebrew Institute. The Hebrew Institute was a school. There weren't very few of us. I mean, when you think in terms of how many people attended, very few Jews on the Hill in proportion to the population went to the Hebrew Institute. Mostly were taught by rabbis and some sellers somewhere, and they learned to be bar mitzvah, and how to pray, and that to the extent of their...
Do you recall some of the other people that were at the Hebrew Institute with you at the same time? Or who went to Sunday school at the same time?
No, but there were, I remember some of the people at the Hebrew Institute. I remember Maury Hoffman, A. Bar Cohn, these are two attorneys. We went through Rabbi Granowitz, we know Rabbi Granowitz. Yeah, they were older than me, much older, a number of years older than me. And the Saul Abrams, who was not head of the Institute, he was a year ahead of me. And Lou Shub, one time Lou Shub became very big in the American Jewish Committee, right boy from Braddock. Henry Foreman, attorney, also went through this at that time. But there were not too many because we learned Jewish history, and we learned it in the language, we learned it in Hebrew, and we learned more than just prayer. And we would go to the other day, they had the synagogue on Saturday morning, we would go to shul, and then after the shul, there was bar mitzvah, and he was the shul. As a matter of fact, at one point in time, they decided they wanted to make that some sort